Welcome to the Scottish podcast by Scottish people about Scottish things. We're three lifelong friends and displaced Scotsmen who get together to talk about our homeland, the weird stuff that happens there, and to remind us why we are the way we are. Welcome to This'll Do Nicely. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's story with Rory. I am Rory, and I am joined once again by Special Agent Christopher Irvin and super secret barrel detective Johnny Naismith.
Hello, boys.
How you doing, boys?
Very good.
How are you?
Enjoyed that.
I'm very good. I enjoyed last week's episode. Everybody knows when we do these back to backs, we obviously just record them back to back.
You're breaking the fourth wall.
I know. I like to create the facade that we record it once a week and we're there with the readers doing at the same time, but I feel like I'm lying.
What have you been up to since the last episode? Are you doing stuff
exactly.
And things, or yeah.
Guys, we need to talk about the fact that this podcast's on Spotify, and I feel that it's only right for us to, in protest against Joe Rogan and his misinformation, for us to Spotify. I think.
How? Hold on. I want to. I want to stand in solidarity with Joe Rogan. Stop listening to Neil Young song.
I just think this is the nail in the coffin that is needed to fight the Joe Rogan misinformation train.
You're just saying that because Gary works there and you want Gary to be out of a job.
Fucking hate him. I can't believe he did that to us. He betrayed us. Yeah.
Gary,
you know that the anti-vax stuff that Joe Rogan spouted only sort of accelerated as soon as Gary went there.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
No. Who do you think was doing most of the blogging on roarchan.org.edu?
I had noticed that it slowed down.
Yeah, I don't have the time or the insane ideas that Gary did.
Of course not. You're a very busy man. You got a full-time job. You got 12 cats.
Yeah.
You can't write down everything. And look, Gary, God bless him, did all that for free, and now he's
making six figures. He's got dental, he's got medical
guests talking about what mass hypnosis psychosis or whatever it is, and making enemies of Neil Young.
Yeah, but to be honest, he's never been more buff in his life. Like, Gary, he looks swole. He's so bald. He had a full head of hair when he was working for us, but pretty good. Okay, we are in part two of the Pinkerton. Well, Alan, I don't want to say it's a Pinkerton detective agency, as interesting as they are, and it would be fascinating to talk about the agency alone for a long time. We're talking about Alan because I think he is very interesting by himself, and you know, he is Scottish, he was born in Glasgow. But yeah, just a quick reminder for those, you know, it's been a week, so maybe you're not listening to it back to back, but Alan Pinkerton, he was the first private eye. He was born in Glasgow in the early 1800s. He moved over when he was a young man to America, settled down in Dundee, Illinois, near Chicago. And after making some barrels, you know, not minding his own business, he became a sheriff, then a detective, and then set up his own, let's face it, probably Freemason-sponsored National Detective Agency. He created the Pinkertons. And then, you know, what else happened last week? He was fighting train robbers.
He saved Abraham Lincoln from a non-existent threat.
Yeah, he hired the first female detective, and together they quashed the assassination attempt against our greatest president of all time.
There's no president of mine.
I mean, this is the thing. Look, let's face it. Let's literally,
I'm British.
Let's talk this out. Because
Johnny.
Let's say, you know, at the end of the last episode, we were talking about maybe that assassination attempt wasn't real. And I think it probably was, but there was a lot of like just shit talking at the time that suggested it wasn't. Say it was real. Let's assume it is.
I don't think it was without, real. Yeah. I've been thinking about it for a week and I've decided that.
It's just your opinion, man, you know. But let's assume it is, right?
Yes.
Assume it is real. Without Alan Pinkerton, without that boy from the Gorbals
of Glasgow. Change the course of history.
Exactly. Abraham Lincoln dies. He doesn't free the slaves. The Civil War is lost. Like, who knows what would have happened? Who knows where America would be, where the world would be without Alan and his barrel disguises?
You're amazing welcome, what a barrel America. Can do to yeah. the world.
Fortunately, he's created a very harmonious society and everything is fine here. And
yeah.
Seems to be
there's
okay.
absolutely nothing wrong with America, the greatest country in the world.
It's it's the old adage, if a butterfly flaps its wings in the
a
west.
A butterfly dresses up in a barrel in 1869. What happens yeah,
exactly.
300 years later?
A Scotsman hides in a barrel in Dundee, Illinois. So yes, he's just saved the life of the greatest president who ever continued to live.
But it's us to shame a bit, doesn't it? I mean, we've all moved to America. We haven't had that kind of impact, have we? Have we?
We don't know.
Maybe we have.
Maybe we have. We just don't know it.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know? Maybe if we hadn't moved here, things would be even worse.
True.
Think
okay,
about that.
I'll take it.
I mean, I've seen Trump in Trump Tower once, and then I saw Biden at a rally once, and both of them are still very much alive.
You saved
so
them.
So who's to say that my presence didn't, you know...
Were you wearing a disguise?
I was wearing a COVID mask for the there Biden one. The Trump one, I was wearing just a full New York Knicks basketball gear.
I'm going to say an oak barrel.
Yeah.
Full
3XL basketball gear I just bought from the NBA store. And I was showing my mother all the hoops that I can make at the time.
This is... I mean...
And then Trump came down the elevator at Trump Tower.
You're not dispelling the myth that Scotsmen like to make up stories, and that's not useful for
okay.
the story that
the,
we're trying
the
to
Trump,
tell
today. The Trump bit of that story is true. I did see him in Trump Tower once, but... Yeah.
But it was actually just double
it
XL.
It wasn't New York Knicks, it was the Sacramento Kings. Love an underdog.
So yeah, we left off last week talking about Kate Warren and Pinkerton saving Abraham Lincoln's life on his way to the inauguration. And as everybody who has, you know, a basic level of education knows, Lincoln survived. He got appointed president, and then the Civil War kicked off because people were not chuffed about that. And because of this friendship that he had, that Lincoln had with Pinkerton, and because he had potentially just saved his life, he was appointed, and because of obviously the skill set that he had as a detective and, you know, subterfuge and all that type of stuff, he was appointed the head of the Union Intelligence Service. And this is kind of going back to the beginning of our last week's episode where I was talking about how he invented the CIA. This is the beginning of the American Intelligence Service departments and agencies and all this type of stuff, part of the federal intelligence agencies. And he worked with Lincoln. You see him in a lot of photos during the Civil War. You'll see Lincoln standing there, and there's a wee beardy Scotsman standing beside him, looking a bit shifty.
Is that him?
Halfway.
I think you're about to get shot.
Like at least two or three barrels, no more than 4 feet away from him.
Even when you can't see him in the photos, he's there.
He's there. if you see a photo during the Civil War of a barrel, that's Pinkerton.
That's him.
But he did. He
also, also invented the disguise around the newspaper with the two eye holes for the newspaper. Luke, so if you see any of those. A lot of his inventions were basically just two eye holes through an object and to blend in.
But he was sending, you know, spies happened, like spies existed, you know, before the Civil War. But he was kind of pushing the boundaries of what they were doing, sending people undercover, putting them in disguises, putting on voices. It was not so much just, what's the word I'm looking for? Just like,
it sounds so silly now. You know, when you live in a world where like it's so technically advanced and all the things, like it just, yes, it sounds like a joke. The idea of, you know, I'm going to just dress up as someone and put a voice on, and that'll be the height of innovation and, you know, the intelligence services.
There's this whole running thing through the Pinkerton Detective Agency as to why they were so successful was just because they were good at writing things down. It was just a case of
definitely,
like...
Definitely was easier back then, I presume.
Right, but it was just like... Police officers would kind of turn up to like, or the local sheriff or whatever would turn up somewhere and just like stand with their like thumbs in their belts and be like, oh, who did it? And if they weren't literally standing there in front of them, there was no level of investigation. Whereas Pinkerton agents would turn up and be like, so tell me what the person looked like. Okay. Oh, I know that person's name because we've got a note of him from this previous thing. It was just, he was organized and he had a filing system and it just changed the game, basically. Wow. But yeah, he was sending spies down. He also went on undercover missions himself, pretending to be a Confederate soldier. And he named himself Major E.G. Allen. Now, Allen Pinkerton is spelled A-L-L-A-N. Major E.G. Allen is E-G-A-L-L-E-N. Which I think is fucking genius. Like, it's basically me going undercover and calling myself Captain Rory. Because, like, it just means that somebody nearby would have gone, like, Major Allen. And, like, because his first name is Allen, he turns around. Whereas if he calls himself Major Stevenson...
Oh, I see what you mean, yeah.
Yeah. It's I think it's so stupid and silly, but... kind of genius.
This is the bit and where again, I'm like, even then, this is, I was saying it last episode, but like, there must have been a point where, you know, if you're, you know, a train robber or something, you must have got word of this thing happening and his name attached to it. Like, it just amazes me that he can still be going and doing it himself. Like, there must be a point where they've got, like, I don't know, a drawing of, you know, those sort of like court drawings of someone, or like, I don't know, it just, it's kind of,
but it is like
doubly amazing.
Up until literally the 70s, Johnny, like you could move to a different state and just be like, yeah, my name's Trevor now. And I would be like, all right, go bananas. Like you grow a beard or shave your beard.
Well, you say the 70s, but I just watched the new season of Dexter and he turns up with a new name in upstate New York and his name's Jim, and that no one seems to make any bat an eyelid.
I mean,
then, of course, things start to unravel and his original identity comes out and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, like,
but that,
this has been going on now. This has been going on since the 1960s when Lincoln was president, and it's still going on.
Summer of love. Yeah, so he's running around pretending to be Major E.G. Allen. He's doing things that he's doing counterintelligence, which was a new thing at the time, not just gathering information from other people, but actually planting other intelligence about the Union soldiers at the time. There is this, you know, this continuous fraying of his relationship with Lincoln is running through the like their history. And part of it is also apparently the agent, he and his agents screwed up a few times by basically overestimating the number of Confederate soldiers in certain locations, which kind of slowed down the Union's advance, slowed down like their overall success in the war. But overall, obviously, they were successful and he was successful. And during the whole thing, and this is where it kind of comes back to, you know, they get the Pinkerton agency gets a really shit deal, but Alan Pinkerton himself was an ardent abolitionist. So he not only was he hiring female spies or female detectives, but he also hired black spies as well. There's John Scobel, who was part of like Pinkerton's spy ring, and he would send him down to steal information from the Confederate Army. And it was just, again, things were just so backwards and bananas back then that this guy Scobel would literally just turn up, effectively pretend to be a slave. And people were like, well, he's black, so he obviously can't read or write. He's so stupid. We'll just talk around. We'll say anything around him, and he won't be able to understand what we're saying effectively. And so he was just hanging around like Confederate plotters what they called, like people, secessionists and stuff like that. They would talk about like military plans. They would leave documents in front of him, and they would just assume that he couldn't read or write. They assumed that because they were talking, you know, about high level stuff, that he just wouldn't understand it. Then he would disappear and then give all the information to the Union. There's also a strong suggestion that Pinkerton's cabin that he had back in Dundee, Illinois, was also part of the Underground Railroad that was a stop along the way as well. So,
interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of like interaction between him and John Brown, who was the leader of the abolitionist movement. And so they were meant to be friends. And so the suggestion is that Pinkerton's cabin in Illinois helped people kind of hide them, feed them, and then give them some money and give them some work. He was employing them to help build his, you know, spy barrels and stuff like that. yeah. And then, and so like, he was obviously like, that's a great thing that he did. He helped, you know, fight against slavery. It's why he was friends with Lincoln as well. Or it's part of the reason why he was friends with Lincoln, was this kind of combined belief that slavery is wrong and should be outlawed. But there's also like, every so often there's this running thread of the reason that he was anti unions is because a lot of the people that were in the unions were Irish, and like he was helping black Americans and ending slavery, but was apparently very racist against Irish people, just fucking hated the Irish. And so just like, okay, again, you're just a complex weird dude. And like, you don't know, because it's hard to get.
Everyone's got to have an outlet, I suppose, right?
Right, sure. Everybody's a little bit racist, you know, just depends on who it's against.
God.
I know. So, this is the Civil War.
I'd love it if he just did, every time there was an assassination plot for Lincoln. Or he's like, those are, there was a thing, the Irish, that are after you, actually. I think about it.
I wouldn't, from, look, and this was only like kind of hinted at a few times that they couldn't quite, it was a lot of people just trying to, there's so much written about trying to understand why he was the way he was and why he thought the way he was. Because he wasn't black and white. He was just like, yep, I believe in this thing, but I don't believe in this thing and this thing. And they were trying to reconcile why that was. Like, why would a guy who was a Chartist and fighting for workers' rights back in Glasgow create a company that literally kills strikers and union workers? Like, they basically can't get their head around that. And it just, like, there's all this other stuff. And part of it, you know, there was an interesting thing where again, this was a little bit later on, maybe later on in his life, maybe after his life, I don't know the exact dates, but like during the labor movement, when this striking has happened, when the union busting is happening by the Pinkertons, they're doing, they're hired to protect scab workers who are coming in and doing the work for the strikers, like instead of the strikers. And again, it's such a fucking complicated history, because you've got the strikers who just want like fair wages and fair, like they don't want to die while they're doing their job. And the people that the Pinkerton agency are protecting are black workers who are like, that's the first jobs that they're getting, the first time that they're being gainfully employed outside of slavery. And so it's like, okay, again, this is fucking complicated because yes, black people should be allowed to be employed, but also union workers and employees shouldn't be treated like garbage. So the history and everything that kind of runs around this agency is so complicated and interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it's a fascinating.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you could read about and talk about for so long. But anyway, we're only talking about Alan. my point is, the Civil War happens. The he's sending spies all around. He's fighting for the Union Army, and then after the Civil War ends, there's obviously this kind of like, again, it's at the Wild West. There's this fallout. There's criminals everywhere. He succeeds, like he basically steps down from his position as head of the Union Intelligence Service. Can't remember the guy that took it over, but that's the guy that creates the Secret Service and then eventually morphs into the CIA. And then Alan goes back to hunting train robbers and people like common criminals around America. And one of the people that he gets a bee in his bonnet about, if you will, is Jesse James. And this is where, Chris, I think you're going to tell us a little bit about Jesse and the rivalry I think these two had.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and I'm so glad that we're doing this episode because it's a subject I just didn't know about. Really interesting to dive into it. But as you've obviously been saying, that Pinkerton was very active on the Union side. On the other hand, Jesse James and his cohorts were very active for the Confederacy. And when the Civil War ended, this didn't really end itself. There were still kind of strong differences that lasted for a long time. And the popular story of Jesse James was that his rampage of train and bank robberies was kind of his way of continuing the Southern resistance.
Guys know this? Did you have, like, I just always knew, like, Jesse James, the outlaw cowboy.
Yeah. Yeah. My knowledge of Jesse James was basically that with the Brad Pitt film.
Yeah.
He's kind of painted as a bit of a Robin Hood figure, but I'll allude to that a little bit as to why that is. He's cohorts with other folks like William Quantrill, the Quantrill's Raiders, and there's the Younger Gang as well. So they're all kind of acquaintances from the Civil War. They've all got strong Confederate beliefs. And apparently a lot of this is kind of stoked by sensational newspaper and magazine stories, which kind of painted Jesse James as this like outlaw crusader. Yeah. And I think there was, in particular, there was a very sympathetic newspaper columnist that sort of coined this mythos that he was this Robin Hood type figure that robbed from the horrible, you know, train barons and banks or whatever and gave it to the poor. But there's not actually really any evidence of that. It's just, he was just a piece of shit.
Continuing the war by himself, like just stealing for his own benefit. Like, it's so interesting because I only know him through movies.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the Pinkertons' place in all this is because they're under contract from the railroads and from the bank associations to apprehend these outlaws, as you alluded to, Rory. And they could kind of do what they want. As you said, they could take matters into their own hands if they needed to. And they were frequently hired by big business to kind of counter and prevent these issues. One of the things about the Pinkertons is, you sort of alluded to this as well, that they were incredibly relentless. So once they got on your trail, they really didn't let up. And apparently there was all these incidences of Pinkerton agents managing to trace James and his gang many times to the towns just as he'd kind of been there. And this is kind of a major reason why James is thought to have lived under an assumed name by the end of the deal. And because the banks and railroads had this huge bounty in his head, and Pinkerton himself was putting more and more pressure on him. And the most famous incident is in January 25th, 1875, at the James Farm. And again, Rory, you mentioned this earlier, but I think you said this about the unions, but the Pinkertons basically set the house on fire. They threw an incendiary device into this. Oh, no, no, yeah, so this is at the farm.
Shit. Yeah.
And the bomb, James wasn't there. The bomb actually killed James's younger half brother and blew off one of his mother's arms.
Jesus.
Wow. Yeah. Sorry.
I just want to, like, so, yeah, from what I knew, they were basically doing these, like, terror campaigns. And this was, again, apparently later on that they were doing these terror campaigns against union workers. But, like, they were trying to catch Jesse James. They didn't know whether he was in a house, and they just firebombed it?
Yeah, yeah. And I read a really interesting article from the Associated Press. This is a few years old. This is an old documentary from about 10 years ago or so. The documentary is apparently called The Life and Death of Jesse James. And they say that James wasn't around when the explosion went through the farmhouse. 8-year-old Archie Samuel was killed. And his mum, and Archie's mother, Zerelda Samuel, had to have part of her arm amputated. And cited in the documentary itself is a letter that was recently discovered in the National Archives from Pinkerton. It was written a month before the explosion. It was addressed to a lawyer called Samuel Hardwick, who's one of Pinkerton's local contacts. And the documentary basically, Pinkerton gives Hardwick detailed instructions for a raid on the farm. And the film claims that at one point he says, above everything, destroy the house. Let the men take no risk. Burn the house down. And Pinkerton also used this. He told Hardwick to have the raiders use a thing called a Greek fire, which is apparently quite a primitive type of bomb. So historians agree that two of the Pinkerton agents hurled two explosive devices into the house, thinking that this would be used as a way to kind of flush James out. It's clearly a tactic that they used, as you said. You know, it would either flush him out or illuminate the building. But they think that maybe one of the flare devices accidentally exploded, and this happened. Now, what the funny thing that happened after this is then, instead of sort of stopping the James gang's robberies, it kind of won them public sympathy, and even prompted an unsuccessful push in the Missouri legislature to grant amnesty to the gang. And I think that's kind of where part of the, you know, mythos of Jesse James comes from. You know, that he was being hounded by the awful lawmen. And a grand jury even indicted Pinkerton and seven others for murder 2 months after the bombings, but the charges were apparently dropped. And yeah, it's, you know, there's James's descendants were even quoted in this article, saying that they always believed that the Pinkertons were involved because a pistol with the company insignia was found near the farmhouse. And
it's just like signing your own gun is...
Right, yeah.
It reminds me of the Peacekeeper, what's it called?
Peacemaker
TV show, where he's like, I need the Dove of Peace on my gun.
It's exactly that. But... yeah, oh, absolutely fascinating. I believe in correspondence and stuff, Pinkerton is like obsessed with going after Jesse James himself. You know, I don't know how much of the hard yards he was putting on the ground, or if he was maybe, you know, older by that point. I suspect he was, but yeah, he apparently took on this in keen interest because the James gang had eluded them for so long. And I guess it all kind of culminated with this incident at the farmhouse.
Yeah, I didn't read that much about it, but I heard that he wasn't even really working for anybody at this point. Towards the end of his chase of Jesse James, he was just like, this was his own personal crusade. I think he was funding it himself because, yeah, he was eluded him so long. But
yeah, I mean, from what I read, it was part of the detective agency itself that did this, but it may be that he was kind of directing traffic from the sidelines.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, it sounds so similar to, you know, like the Branch Davidians, it was like the guns, firearm, whatever the, like one of the American agencies that went.
ATF,
yeah, that went and like, they shot tear gas into the Branch Davidians compound, and then they did something else, and they didn't realize that the tear gas would then ignite and set the whole thing ablaze. It's a very kind of similar story of like, oh yeah, we just accidentally burnt this place to the ground and killed everybody inside.
Yeah, yeah, wow. Very much so.
That's bananas. So, he never caught James.
No, apparently James sort of lived out his final years under an assumed identity. I don't know if James was caught. I didn't dive into the full history of Jesse James, you know.
But Pinkerton never caught him.
Pinkerton, as far as I'm aware, didn't catch him.
He was the one that gets away, isn't it?
He was his Moby Dick.
Yeah.
That's... Yeah, if I'm wrong, please tell me, Sally. I obviously screwed that up, if I am, but...
That's fascinating. No, it was
just a good little bit, intersection of two famous people in history. And
yeah.
I haven't seen the Brad Pitt film. I don't know if Pinkerton is a character in it or not.
Of course,
the film said Jesse James was killed by Robert Ford. That's the whole premise of the film.
Yeah.
He's killed by one of his own gang members.
Spoiler.
I think it's in the title.
It's in the title of the film, Johnny.
That makes sense. Well, the Pinkertons appear, and I'm going to talk about it in a wee bit, but the Pinkertons appear in so much pop culture, so they will definitely have been in that movie. Yeah, like you said, I don't know if he was doing the active chasing of Jesse James, because he would have been in his 50s at that point, and it was at around this time that Alan Pinkerton starts writing his detective novels. He starts writing his memoirs and, like, I think settling down a little bit. And he was prolific. I don't know how long they were. I briefly flirted with the idea of reading one, could not be bothered, if I'm honest with you. I took a look at them, and it's funny. They're all called, like, something. They're just so bland. They're like something, something, and the detectives. So it's like, The Train Robbery and the Detectives. The Hunt for Jesse James and the Detectives. And if you want to get an idea of Alan Pinkerton's political leanings or his, you know, beliefs in general, he has one book called Strikers, Communists, Tramps, and the Detectives. So that kind of lets you know where he was. So yeah, towards the end of life, he was writing these detective novels, and that's what's kind of muddied the waters in terms of what is fact and what is fiction, because he does talk about the adventure, his own adventures and the adventures of the Pinkerton Detective Agency. He's elaborating on certain things. He's obviously using hyperbole and all that type of stuff, which is, you know, fine, but it's just annoying when you're trying to get to the root of what is true. At the same time, he was still working, and he was trying to set up a national or federal database of criminals. So again, this is something that was still pretty much lacking, you know, in the latter part of the 1900s, is like when somebody committed a crime in Texas, they had no idea about it in New York. And then the guy would just move to Colorado and never be seen or heard of again. And Pinkerton was like, well, what we need to do is, if somebody commits a crime anywhere at a certain level, we need to write down his name and the crime that they committed. And we all should send around a newsletter, basically. And it's the same, again, it's why I was alluding to the Federal Bureau of Investigation at the beginning of our last episode, is like, that's ultimately what led to the FBI, is this, like, okay, when we have these crimes across state lines. They become federal, so we need some sort of investigative bureau to, you know, stop this or find out what happened. And that was his vision for the future of crime fighting. So yeah, the company went from being this like train rob, like fighting train robbers, and that became less prevalent. And one of the reasons it became less prevalent is because of the pioneering work that Pinkerton did. Law enforcement improved around the country, so it became more federal. It was able to kind of cross state lines. They had a better understanding of infiltrating and catching criminals. The skills that he kind of passed on to the agencies effectively took away work from him. And so they switched, like I said, from the kind of crime fighting aspect of it towards the kind of private, the union busting, the infiltration of unions, the strike busting, the all that sort of thing. And that's where they were started to make more money towards the end of his life. And then it really ramped up after he died. And he died in July 1st, 1884. And I think, how was it that Robert Louis Stevenson died? He like shot himself with a cork or something?
He was uncorking a bottle of wine and then went, "What's that?"
That was it.
And just collapsed.
Keeled over.
Yeah, just keeled over. Alan Pinkerton apparently slipped on the pavement, bit his own tongue, which then over time became gangrenous and then died. For a guy who has lived quite a life, what a way to go. And
that sucks.
With like every step of his story, there's other possibilities, and there's a suggestion that he did have a stroke the year before he fell. And so the suggestion is that he actually had a stroke, and it wasn't that, you know, his gangrenous tongue killed him, but like, fucking hell, man.
Terrible.
I mean, it would have been ironic if he'd been like crushed to death by a barrel, but, you know. So yeah, his sons took over the agency, and they are the ones that it's like, he might have been complicated and he might not have been like a perfect person, but at least he had like did some good things in his life. The sons sound like they were like true kind of arseholes. The guys that became like, that really gave the Pinkerton Detective Agency the reputation that it has today of just being like anti-labor, anti-unions, just fighting against like the common working man in general and being the thugs for corporate America. If you were rich, you could afford a Pinkerton agency to kind of do what you want. That's what you would hire them to do. And that's to a degree what they are. And kind of through that and through the mysticism and, the celebrity of the Pinkerton agency, they are all over pop media. Like they are in, they're mentioned in songs, in movies, in TV shows, in computer games. James Bond, Felix, in the recent James Bond
movies, Leiter.
Yeah, who's a CIA agent. He was a Pinkerton agent in earlier books. Oh. There's a movie called The Outlaws. Alan Pinkerton is played by Timothy Dalton. There's a show called The Pinkertons, a TV show that came out a few years ago, and he's played by Angus McFadden, the guy who almost exclusively plays Robert the Bruce. He played Robert the Bruce in Braveheart, and then he did that really bad Robert the Bruce movie more recently. Johnny, I think you played Red Dead Redemption 2, didn't you?
Do you know, it took me ages to realize where I knew I'd seen Pinkerton somewhere else, and it's very prevalent in that game where I think they are kind of like outlaws in that. I can't really quite remember, but they show up a lot in the game. Basically.
Well, they're the villains. I think they chase I don't, because I've not played the game, so I don't know the concept of it. All I know is that the Pinkerton Detective Agency sued Rockstar Games, a company we've spoken about in our Grand Theft Auto episode a long time ago. But the Pinkerton Detective Agency sued Rockstar Games, who created Red Dead Redemption 2, because of their villainous portrayal in the game. Funny. Yeah. But it was a couple of years ago, and I think it was basically just thrown out of court for being like, no, you are the villains. Like, get over it. Like, you're bad guys. Deal with it. And then, like I said, Emily Blunt's movie's coming out about Kate Warren, which, like...
Wasn't Weezer's first album called Pinkerton as well?
Yes.
I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's
I mean,
related.
You're listing off a whole bunch of pop culture stuff, but at the same time, I don't think I've seen any of it, and it all seems very ripe for a mini-series of some variety. I
yeah.
mean, there's some fantastic stories in there.
So I couldn't find the TV show, the Angus McFadden TV show, anywhere to stream. I only watch a trailer, and the trailer looks garbage. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, I mean, if he's the main character in it, it's not...
Yeah, but I totally... So I think they're fairly big in Deadwood. But the this is the thing. Like, because they morphed into something so bad and insidious that people kind of... I think if you could just make a movie about Alan Pinkerton, it could, or a TV show about Alan Pinkerton, it could be really good. And maybe, like, I think the Kate Warren angle makes sense as well, because she sounds phenomenal. But yeah, they're everywhere. And look, if you want to go and visit Alan Pinkerton's grave, he is buried in Chicago in a plot between his wife and Kate Warren. So you can visit all three of them at the same time.
Oh no, he was having an affair with her, wasn't he?
He was definitely shagging her. He was definitely shagging her. Like there's a lot of quotes about, he talks about how handsome she is, and she's very homely and all this type of stuff. He was 100% shagging her. Yes. So look, I just think he's. He's always like, I known about the Pinkerton Detective Agency, and what they do now, I think we mentioned it in the last episode, is nefarious. They're one of those private, what would we call them, like security firms. They fall under the Securitas umbrella. Securitas, the Swedish company, I think, bought them. And they're the guys that just, you know, protect. You can hire them as like bodyguards for Jay-Z and, you know, Justin Bieber, but you can also have them probably go in and do like corporate espionage. I don't know. I don't actually know what they do. And this is satire, speculation. But I just wouldn't be surprised if they're also the type of people that are involved in like harassing the victims of Harvey Weinstein and all that kind of nonsense. But I do think Alan Pinkerton himself was a relatively good guy trying to do good things. It seems like his work in the abolitionist field was genuinely pretty solid. And he was trying to catch the bad guys and do the right thing. It's just, it morphed into something pretty ropey towards the end. What are your thoughts, boys?
Tale as old as time, basically, having a successful company and handing it on to your fail sons who turn it into some monster that it shouldn't be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, he could also have just been like, you know, he was young and a teenager when he was in the Chartists in Glasgow, and he comes over to America, makes a bit of money, gets a bit of celebrity, and totally changes. That's also...
yeah, so it kind of adds change. Up, right? It's like...
Right.
People change.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it could also be that he found some success in spying on these counterfeiters, and then just it went that way for him the rest of his life. He's like, oh god, I don't actually like doing this, but I'm really good at it. He's a great subject to cover, because he's not super famous, and like, we joke about Scotland laying claim to multiple stuff, but there's a legit claim there for at the least, the Secret Service. And as you say, so heavily involved with Lincoln and all that, and Jesse James, he's like clearly an incredibly important figure that goes under the radar a little bit, probably because of the legacy that he left behind him.
Yeah. Johnny, final thoughts?
Yeah, I do think this, he's a super interesting character to talk about, because you kind of, when you first were kind of mentioning we should do this, I was like, it's a name that rings a bell a lot, and like partly that was that game and things like that, but you're sort of semi-aware of the history of it. And actually, I do think it's funny how big an impact things like him stumbling across some, you know, criminals in a forest, like set this sort of chain of events in motion that became this, you know, and here we are talking about him, you know, however many years later. And actually, I just find it funny, just this little like Glaswegian with the gift of the gab, kind of like discovering he's quite good at this thing and then just following that through, and suddenly he's, you know, saving assassinations and changing the course of history and whatever else. And so, yeah, fascinating character, kind of amazing.
I totally agree. I love the idea of just this like angry little Ouija. And I do think that's why the Jesse James stuff is so fascinating, because he might not necessarily have been that good at what he did, but he was just like, I'm going to fucking get that guy.
All right. I've got a question for you two guys. Top of your head, who plays Pinkerton in our Amazon Prime miniseries about him? Because I've got one.
McAvoy.
I actually, Johnny's right, McAvoy would be perfect. I want to go...
I've been watching a lot of Catastrophe recently, so I'm going to go with Mark Bonner.
I don't know who's that.
Bonner?
He's the very angry Scottish man in Catastrophe.
I'm actually, you know who'd be great? The guy from Line of Duty.
Oh, yeah, he'd be good.
He'd be really good.
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Getting back to his Scottish roots. I could see him making a barrel. And he's small, so you can hide him on.
He looks like a barrel.
You can easily hide in a barrel. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I don't know what your name is, but if you want to get him.
Martin Compston.
Martin Compston, thank you. Martin, if you want to get involved in our Amazon series about Alan Pinkerton, get in touch at thistledonicelypod on Twitter, thistledonicelypod@gmail.com, or hit us up on Instagram. At Thistle Dupont. I don't know. I don't remember any of these things. We're also on Facebook. You can phone us at 4844-TDMPOD. Just give us your like agent number. We'll be in contact. And I think this will be probably more beneficial for you than it is for us. But we'll try and make it
mutually
beneficial.
If you can bring your Irish police chief along as well, just to say bank coppers.
Yes.
That would seal the deal.
That would be really, really good.
I'm not bent.
I could also see the lady from Line of Duty playing Kate Warren as well. She'd be good.
Her name is Kate in
Yeah.
I don't know.
That might just be the reason I think she might be quite good at it. All right. Well, on that lovely note, this'll do, lads. This'll do nicely. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you like the show, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and write a quick review on whichever podcasting app you're using. It really does help us out. We'd love to hear from you either via our email, thistledonicelypod@gmail.com, or via facebook.com/thistledopod, or follow us on Instagram and Twitter at thistledopod. You can also visit our website, thistledonicelypod.com. All original music in this podcast is written and performed by our very own Johnny Naismith. Please like and subscribe to his YouTube channel and follow him on Instagram at JAW_KNEE_. Love, hugs, and kisses from the Thistle Do Nicely pod.
Untitled Kate Warren biopic. Oh, I don't like this. Don't like this at all.